Hey there, we're Mighty Coconut, and welcome to Walkabout Talkabouts, a series of creative discussions between film and gaming luminaries. Let's tune in as they play a round of our studio's VR game, Walkabout Mini Golf. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. Don here. We're going to do another talkabout, and we're going to do it with my very dear friend, Dr. Diaz, who she and I met during COVID in VR, and we'll talk about that. But I'm going to start by introducing myself while I do the first putt. Here I go. So my name's Don Carson. I'm the senior art director here at Walkabout Mini Golf.
Yay. Thank you for hitting the rings, so I don't feel so bad when I hit the rings.
Don't worry about it. I'm a terrible golfer. Okay.
So now I'm introducing me, yeah?
Okay. That's right.
So, hi, I'm Dr. Ruth Diaz, and I am an environmental designer and also a community designer in virtual reality. And yeah, very happy to be here. And I putt.
Go for it.
And pretend that it is not going to do exactly what it did. Okay. Yeah.
Great. So our story and why I'm so incredibly grateful and happy that we're getting to chat here on one of the Talk About episodes is that Dr. Diaz and I met during COVID when we were trying out Meta's Horizon Worlds as a venue for world building, using the tools to start creating virtual environments. Mm-hmm. And my background being from more environmental theme parky design roles was that there are certain rules by which you approach designing a place. And Dr. Diaz basically trained me out of that by giving me perspectives of placemaking that I had never considered before. And it's been a really rich last 5 years of conversations about world building and it's the way it affects humans.
Yeah, I guess in a weird way, you've been in the university of my mind.
So I'd love to hear about your background and how you've brought that to VR.
Yeah. Well, my original background, I think we've talked about this, was in clinical psychology. And sometimes I think for people, as they learn the craft and the art of it, they will actually think about, you know, do they ascribe to Freud, who is the classical origin of psychology? Or if that doesn't fit for them, then they will sometimes find Carl Jung as an alternative, because Carl Jung is by some thought of as the other father of psychology, so to speak. And I could metabolize Carl Jung, especially in his earlier writing through the Red Book, where he later admitted that this book was a journal of his unraveling, and it was what everything else he ever built was based on, was this Red Book, where he believed and developed this theory of the collective unconscious, this place in this other dimension that we can actually, to some degree, communicate with each other in this dreamlike space of metaphor and be transformed by it, and many times be lost by it. And so the Red Book is about him going on his own internal walkabout of sorts and meeting all these very shadowy doomsday figures and having to face his own shadow and his own fears of himself by having what really reads as like full out hallucinatory experiences and or some hypothesized drug-induced experiences for him to try to really explore and rearrange the inside of him. So when I came into social VR to launch and test and prototype a conflict resiliency model I developed that looks a little bit like an atom, I also felt really a lot of affection and almost nostalgia on behalf of Carl Jung, because I thought he didn't get to see this. But in a weird way, social VR is kind of his theory in reality happening. And And that's given me a very compassionate lens to look at the culture in social VR as it is today, and mm-hmm. not see that as proof of our brokenness as humans, see it as a type of instinctual diving into very primitive and rudimentary frames inside of us that are young and very passionate and can be very harmful, but still we're trying to rediscover kind of our life flow when we come into these spaces. Mm-hmm. And then I came to your worlds. I met you through your worlds before I ever met you in Horizon. And I found that the mirror of your worlds inside of me calmed me. Mm. And I came back to your worlds over and over again, and I brought people to them, and we would go into your tarot world and your different scenes world, and we would try to tell ourselves a story of who could make a world like this with such primitive objects so meaningful. Like, they just felt different to us, and we didn't know why. And so it became almost a lore or a game to make up stories on who was behind these worlds. And then that ties me into the bee crown that I have on me, and mm-hmm. that I was scheming with a group of people in the community about how to invite a cultural shift and help people get outside of just trying to build for themselves. And actually try to build for people who weren't like them, which you're always going to fail at, to build for mm-hmm. people who aren't like you. And so I started this campaign that somebody else came up with, and I led it, called Bee Diversity, where we asked mm-hmm. all these community members to build a bee out of primitive objects as a insignia or as a contribution to say, we can both look like each other and be very homogenous, but we can mm-hmm. still remember we are all diverse creatures and put our own spin on each bee. So we had a rabbi bee, we had a zombie bee, we had all these different bees submitted that were very, anthropomorphized or mythologized, so it didn't almost look like a bee. But when I reached out to you and I said, will you make a bee? And you made a bumblebee, which mm-hmm. is a bee. It's just a different kind of bee. And I had the absolute luck to come into the world when you were just leaving it like a little present for me from a magical mm-hmm. creature. And I rushed at you like I was a total fangirl. And I was like, don't go. Who are you? I have to know who you are. And you didn't recoil from that. And I'm honored. But that was the start of our connection, was the collision of my background coming into this social landscape and realizing that a lot of people, to cope with the toxicity that can sometimes be in social VR, they would seclude themselves, like all these little caved windows in here. They would go mm-hmm. into their own little pods, and they didn't realize how important and how wild it was to build connections between those spaces. Mm-hmm. And sure. I started to tug on you to dance and play and build with me to try mm-hmm. to delight people into seeing an old thing a new way.
Yeah, and we met at least once a week during COVID, and we challenged ourselves with an assignment that we had. It's like there's a game you can artists play where they'll start a scribble mm-hmm. and then they'll hand the scribble to somebody yes. else, and then they'll continue it, and back and forth yes. you end up with a piece that isn't what either of the people
this game.
Thought it mm-hmm. was going to be. So we started doing this game where we would pick a topic. And it was always a pretty weighty topic, like grief or death or something really, mm-hmm. really meaty. Mm-hmm. And then we took these really rudimentary tools that Meta was offering us, and we would go away and start a world and then hand it to the next person, and you would take it or I would take it. And then by the end of it, we would end up with this, a place to visit that was a representation of our best guesses And that was a wonderful time. And it was COVID.
Yeah.
So we were so, we had lots of time.
We had the time, exactly. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit like, you know, MASH units during war or whatever. You get creative because there's nothing else to do.
Exactly.
And yeah, what I loved about what we ended up doing with this is we started to realize that talking about it before we were done building it was not as fun. So then we would do it, but mostly not talk about it. And then you brought one of your mentorship pieces for me, which is you saw how many words I was putting into worlds, and you forbade me from using worlds words in our game, which was really frustrating because I had good words. And yet I didn't have anybody else in there that was giving me very cool assignments with your level of experience. So I started to realize how much we use words as placeholders for a story that can be taught a whole different way. And that's where, you know, I think in the beginning, if we had both ever imagined this world like Meow Wolf and believed that we'd be doing this someday and be somehow connected through the fabric of this world also, I think that would have been really hard for me to imagine if I had stayed stuck in putting words everywhere in my worlds. But it was a little bit like I felt like you put a brace on me or something and I had to limp along and I didn't have my main arm, but it deepened me into not just a way to express myself, but also a way to read spaces.
Yeah. Well, and what I learned from that encounter too was, as sort of a theme park storyteller, I was generating what people's expectations of something was, and that tended to be, before that point, linked to what the world of media and stories tell us a place can be. And one of the things you taught me was that you could lead with emotion first, and you could you could build from an emotional place, and then kind of trust that feeling would be broadcast to the visitor, even if you're not there, which is kind of important. People are stumbling on your creation, and if your creation is something like grief, you don't want to hand it to them. You want them to encounter it and then find out what their reaction is to it. And that was really new for me, you know? The whole get in a ride boat and go to the end and be entertained is a way of telling a story in a space. But going in and then itching or scratching on something that's a part of the human experience in that design, I think is something that I've tried to bring to the team here at Walkabout, so that the places certainly are places, but there's an emotional connection that I think some of our players will feel and not know why. And I think it's because of the time we spent talking about this subject when we were building our own little block worlds.
Yeah, I love that because we're talking about this here, and I agree this was the best space for us to do this in, because the way that I see the human mind, having worked clinically with people who were very not overlapping in their sense of reality with the rest of us. So they were in their own worlds. And and at first, when I started to work with these people, I thought, oh, these are the people they used to call crazy. You know, now there's different, more diverse names, but these people are inherently broken. And that was my younger kind of clinician frame. But over time, when I started to really use my empathy to just match them and be where they were at, I started to discover these metaphors that brought us both into a place of resonance with each other. And if I could find a metaphor that their body and their emotion and their logic said yes to, or kind of suspended their logic and they could say yes to, we could play in that metaphor and grow a bridge to other necessary shared reality agreements. And that was before I ever came into VR. And so I think because I learned through emotion from these people first how to get into their worlds. I had to just feel the feelings and prove to them, kind of like entering code into a door, that I could dance their emotional cycle without putting meaning on it. And then I would throw out meaning initially, and they would bat it away like, you know, a ball on fire at first. Mm-hmm. But when I wouldn't be angry about that, I love that we're standing right here because of what's happening over with this creature. When I wasn't angry about what they did with the ball of idea, of metaphor I sent them, they eventually would take it like through mirror, exactly what's happening in this loop, and they would taste it. And then they would have some new growth happening in this space where they were all alone in their mind. This is so tender. I just love that. When I came in here, this was one of my favorite creatures, right? They're both sharing the nutrients together. And I believe that that was where I trained in environmental design before I ever had environmental design accessible to me to play with.
That's something I'd like to touch on too, is that you are a creative person, but I don't think necessarily before Horizons you would have labeled yourself necessarily as an artist. But here you were given art tools to world build, and you were incredibly prolific. Hundreds of worlds you created in that environment. I'd love to hear about that journey, about going from purely the Jungian the id environment where things come from to building places to allow people to experience these notions you're talking about in a environmental way.
Yeah, I guess I started to realize from this conflict model that I developed before I came into VR that the kind of chronicity in modern society is avoiding emotions in all cultures in most ways, especially the uncomfortable ones. Like there's a repression or suppression of naming those or being conscious of them together. And the more I looked at those patterns, I started to see the same patterns in internal relationship with myself and my inner Jungian landscape, in my conflicts with other people, with my conflicts with groups, and even my conflicts looking at the world and feeling all the feelings I felt looking at what was happening in the world. And so when I came in social VR and I found worlds like yours and other creators' worlds, and I felt so many things without ever meeting them or knowing their name or knowing what was behind this half-cooked, very easy set of tools, kind of like Legos or you know, Tinker Toys. These tools were so simple to do that some of these worlds felt like somebody had an idea, they came in, they played around for an hour, and they hit publish, and they never came back in. But I could still read so much from a relationship of a cube and a cone and a little cloud in the sky. So then I started to meet the creators of these worlds and actually test my read of what I thought was going on.
Interesting.
Off of how I found them. And what I found, Don, that has continued on beyond Horizon in multiple apps and games now, is I knew people before I ever knew their name and before I ever knew their stories. When I met them, I instantly was picturing this world that I had visited a year and a half ago. And it was coming to my mind in a metaphor more than it was the exact world. So I felt this strange kind of like intrusion of a thought. And I was impatient sometimes in those connections to get to the point where I understood why I kept having this visualization of like, an example would be a world that had what looked like Niagara Falls. There was nowhere solid to stand in this space. And it was primitive cubes and blocks of water pouring down, but I came into that world and I felt very frightened and like I was going to drown. Right. And it wasn't until a year later that I met that creator and found out that their sibling had died the week before they created that world.
So interesting. I'm going to move to our next poll while we talk.
This was an example of how I started to link the collage kind of digital art that, I never called myself an artist while doing. I started to link that to environmental design and how we communicate through spaces. And I do think that your worlds were a key for me because I felt such a different shift in my physiology and I couldn't explain why. And then when I started to understand the depth and knowledge, I think one of the ways you explained it to me was, you know, the artist always draws the wrong line many times, like thousands and thousands of times, they're going to draw the line that isn't quite right. Mm-hmm. But after they draw so many times, eventually they know where that line lives and they just draw mm-hmm. that line. And people say, memory. Oh, you're so talented, you're so gifted. Right. And you know the truth of how much you have tried so many other lines there before that one line just came out so effortlessly. So, yeah, well, I think
so much of my background has been with the world building for things like a Disney park is that you're I understand the rules, the creative rules to help make something engaging. And that's through composition and color and layout and so on. But our conversations allowed me to see there was a whole nother layer that could mm-hmm. be imbued into mm-hmm. an environment that, like you said, people feel before they even necessarily know what it is, their what mm-hmm. the origins are. And yeah. I've discovered too that it doesn't matter that they know the punchline. What matters is that they feel it. And then yeah. they get to decide what the meaning is of the feeling that we've placed in it. We've had a wonderful conversation with Michael, who's works at Pixar, who's came in here with me at one point, mm-hmm. and he said, "Why is it I feel the love so strongly mm-hmm. in this space?" Mm-hmm. And I yeah. said, "Because every single flower has been placed for the intention of your experience of it."
Yeah, exactly.
And that seems like a kind of a simple way to approach the design, yeah. but really that's kind of our secret sauce, is that every single choice that's been made has been made for you, the person who's going to come in here, and you feel it. You feel yeah. that we're here to play golf, but honestly, we're also here to be humans and interact with each other.
Yeah.
And the context of that interaction is super important. And you play golf.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. And I mean, when you say that, I realize that another reason this world is such a perfect placement or environment for us to have this conversation in, of I'm not looking for the right metaphor for people anymore. I'm just mm-hmm. looking for fluidity in their metaphor. Mm-hmm. And most people, if they find a metaphor or a symbol or a mascot of themselves, that they feel a sense of, yeah, that's me. Even if it's really dark and scary for a lot of people, they feel a sense of validation in it. But that can become precious and it can become fixed and it can become dead accidentally just by mm-hmm. traveling to that idea over and over. So when I build spaces and communities, I'm not looking for people to have a linear path through my experience. And I think you and Walkabout Mini Golf really amplifies the permission to not have a linear path and for that to be okay. All I'm doing, if you think about a circle as having 360 degrees of perspective, I'm looking to just move them by 1 degree from the perspective they're stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we go into a three-dimensional space, you get a sphere and infinite possibilities of perspectives. All of us are representing by standing on this globe at the same time. Each of those is another perspective. And so I think I'm looking for any kind of movement that demonstrates that we remember that what is alive is not the story we're telling, it's how we journey through the story Absolutely. That is telling us.
That's right. Exactly right.
And Meow yeah. Wolf.
And that's an intangible like thing. That. You know, that's yeah. that is, yeah. you know, when someone says, you know, what is the motivation of the design? When that's the motivation of the design,
yeah.
that's a little harder to quantify, but it is not hard to feel.
Yes. And so my guess is, without knowing your team super well, but my guess is that there's a lot of intuitive negotiating happening. that comes across somewhat like, you know, scrum teams and deadlines and OKRs and the things that are the language and things that are needed to make a business move at a harmonious pace. But really, everybody is working off of their guts more than they're working off of their heads. And because of that,
that's true.
Yeah.
Well,
I
and
see
I think
it
it's
in
all,
your environment.
It's also that the way that we're structured is that once it leaves the hand of one team member and goes into the next hands, although there's an agreed upon story thread that we know that this is going to be Meow Wolf, every decision that that person makes is theirs. That they have permission, we've blessed them with the ability to, they're not worker bees, they're a co-creator of this experience. Mm-hmm. And there is not a single one of our courses that has come out that hasn't surprised me by the choices that were made in the most delightful way. And that's everything from the way light bounces off a surface to the placement of things or the way that shaders and animation has been added. And it's that collective permission within the group to go towards that that has what generates, I think, what's kind of unique about the environments we're producing.
Yeah, there's a, you know, there's a paradox in the name Walkabout Mini Golf, if I can crack that open for a moment. Walkabout is to leave the village. And it's to go on the non-linear path. And it's to get lost in the wilderness to some degree and find a truer path for you because you let the other path go. And yet golf is a very linear path.
Yeah.
It has a point A and a point B, and you get the little dot to get into the point B, right? And so weaving both that linear design of a predestined, I know this course was planned for me to do a very specific behavior, use the stick, hit the ball, get it in. But also, I'm coming to this space because this space is going to tug me away a little bit from the seriousness of that linear journey and is going to let me be kind of shocked sometimes and wander and not assume that what I do with this ball is going to be predictable by everything else I have ever believed in life is assumable rules about gravity or objects stay in the same size. Oops,
so
I didn't know it was my
turn. That's a big thing that Henning keeps our feet on the fire when we're designing. You know, he'll ask, what is the walkabout part of this? What he means is certainly it's the path from one hole to the next, but it's also the paths that lead you away that allow you to disappear and go just enjoy an upper lake or things like benches where people, we know that people, when they're done playing, will hang out and have conversations. Let's facilitate that by actually creating environments that encourage you to connect with the people you're playing with.
And that, I think it's the grace, you know, of the somewhat like less poly-rich spaces that when they are designed with this much care and intention for what this team is doing. So this is one of my favorite ones. The sound that comes out of people's mouths when they play this one and see what happens, nothing like it. It's the splitting of whatever the point is that's going to happen right now. And the sound design of that, the
awe and the shock. It's a testament to Katie Kennedy, who is one of the founders of Meow Wolf. She really instilled their philosophy of design. And it's worth mentioning that when we started working with her and we met in Denver at the physical version of Numina, which this course is based on, she said this isn't a futuristic or space swamp. It's a sixth dimensional being. And that was the beginning of our conversation. And so we're inside a six-dimensional being.
Yeah.
And so every single choice made along the way is here to support the narrative that they're trying to base their design on.
That's so cool. I didn't know that story. What courage would be in the world for us to introduce ourselves not as our professional titles, but as as mythical beings, and to start out with that and see where the conversation goes. You know, the other experience I've had in this particular course was in earning my treasured putter here. I feel like I growled at this hunt more than any of the others. And yet I came back here with several people, different ones, before I finished it. And I just asked them to come be with me while I tried to get through the specific hints of the fox hunt in here, because this one felt different to me. This one was based off of other senses than just logic. I had to use my eyes to compare images and look at how the hint and the images I was being given fit with certain areas to find the clue. And it made me howl a lot, but I appreciated the howling because I felt like the team here was just playfully nudging me to grow and get out of what I thought I knew. And feel like a learner again, feel like a newbie, feel like someone who did not understand how to do something I thought I was good at.
We thought this was a risky partnership because unless you live in the United States, until hopefully they'll be building meow wolves in the world, not a lot of people know about it. We're taking someplace very different than you're used to, and we're amazed at how many people are like, I do not know what this is, but I like it. You know, I enjoy being here, and I can feel the whatever you're trying to produce, you've succeeded. And I enjoy being in the space. And a lot of that's a testament to that partnership between Meowth and Walker.
So my hypothesis of sorts, a metaphorical kind of way to explain a bit about what magic Walkabout Mini Golf carries, which of course nobody can ever fully define, otherwise it kind of kills it, is that you have a group creature going on, which is what I call groups who spend enough time together to have rituals of connection. And those rituals develop sometimes logically based off of the group's need, but often, I just love this, the upward waterfall of spirit that takes my ball into the sky. So what I wonder about is how much Walkabout Mini Golf is going on their wandering and finding these ideas, these stories, these brands, these art exhibitions, and they are learning the group creature of that other group. They're learning the spirit of that. And they are replicating kind of almost the soul of that group's product in here a bit. They're giving you the essence of the feeling is supposed to be.
Like with Wallace and Gromit, there are rules by which what we have to produce to be true to the brand, but ultimately it's our love letter to that creation and the people that are creating it. Nice.
Yeah, and I believe that in a world where we have more connection to everybody than we ever have, but are also more isolated and to some degree miserable than we ever have been, being able to be in the belly and the imagination of a group creature is a healing space. It is a place to remember what we want in a sense of village. How this world in specifically is like it's the inside of a tree. It's the inside of an earth cavern. It's the inside of a root. It's the inside of a brain cell. And the ability to feel that intentionality shining and blooming at me from every direction lets me be whatever shape I am in here. I'm just one of the creatures. I don't have to be anything but the one trying to get a golf ball to not fall into the wrong holes.
Excellent. Well, I have a favorite
story that I tell people when I'm describing the work that you do and some of the experiences we've had. Okay.
Nice.
And that is that you and I, and this was probably 4.5 years ago, were in another VR app, and we were playing, I think it was multi-brush. So we were doing sort of tilt brush together. And it was getting late, and I needed to go make dinner. And so I said, I'm going to go. And you said, I think I'm going to go back in Horizon. I'm going to build a womb, is what you said. And I remember you knowing the rudimentary quality of the tools we had, and also the potential, you know, that seemed kind of like a hard task, and one that was potentially wrought with disaster, as far as like that was a big. It's like I'm gonna go build a cabin in the woods is one thing, but I'm gonna go build a womb. That's a whole nother experience.
Primitive shapes, and people are gonna believe it. Right. Yes.
So the next day in the morning, I think it was, you said, "Okay, I did it. Do you want to see it?" Like 12 hours later, and so we went into Horizon, and you had built a womb experience. And it culminated in a cavern space, probably about the same size as this.
Yeah, same size as this,
and, probably a 40-ton fetus, basically.
Fetus, yes.
A curled up baby, like sucking its thumb. Its feet were kind of moving in the amniotic fluid. And there was there's a pulsing umbilical cord. Now, this is made out of Legos, really. I mean, which is really simple.
Yeah.
And what amazed me, and you told me again and again, that when you would bring people to the space, that they universally would start to cry. And the crying was a lot about the fact that they were home to a place they didn't remember, but they remember deeply. Mm-hmm. And that kind of shook my world. Because you had taught me the power of placemaking, but I'd never so viscerally seen something that would core touch something that is about us being humans, to draw tears of remembrance of something we don't consciously remember. And blew my mind. So, and you've done that time and again in the worlds that you've created and the worlds you've taken me to in VR chat. Is it's the ones that test our idea of what a place can be. And the physical world has lots of limitations as to finances and danger and, you know, health, and you don't want to hurt anybody. But in this environment, it's a big soup that allows for the exploration of emotion and to constantly test what a place can be and how humans experience it. Dr. Diaz story.
Oh, thank you. And what's so funny that you tell about that story is you tell the story that people might say, oh, I want to go see a womb and feel like that. But the part of the story that was developed after I built that, you know, I asked myself, how do I get people to believe this? Because they're coming into an application where they don't believe things can feel real in here, because they see it as less than or Play-Doh kind of. They're like, this is children's play. This is not real stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I created a very fun and then a very frustrating experience to push people into a place of giving up before they got into that spot.
Yeah.
And the thing that I remember you telling me after coming back in that next morning is that you had hit that wall of frustration trying to get into the space you knew existed.
Well, and describe that process, because I left that part out.
It's the funny thing that people don't really want to talk about because it feels a little cringe to say it as a story, but this is what worked. And I think half of the world is the first part, which is you start out inside of some kind of
pink
organic
cave.
Giant
cave.
And in order to get through the first barrier, you see all these giant sperm swimming by you, and you see these oval suspended kind of egg looking things in the air. you have to put one of those ovals on your head. And when you move forward, a tail comes out the back end and you start to realize I am a sperm. And now right. you can get through that first wall, and then you're given super speed to race with the other sperm, who are your friends, who are giggling and gasping out of horror that what have they gotten themselves into. You do this super fast race to the egg, but the race
this
is
giant.
Rigged.
I mean, it's a giant,
this giant egg,
alien
that's suspended.
Egg
yes,
in
that's
space,
right.
Yes.
And the race always has another sperm that got there first, and
right.
you can't get in.
You just hurl your head at it and can't get in. Right.
Until you give up, you cannot move to the next spot. And so this is a type of trying to dig at a place in people where they all won this race. That was their first success. That was their first yes. And then I'm going to say, no, this is a different outcome.
You're too late. Yeah.
You're too late. You never got there. And then they can either leave. I've heard many people say they leave the world at that point and they don't come back until they hear that there's a second part. But if they stay and they remove this, this sperm head. Nice. I went to my next ball spot.
Ball.
If they allow themselves to be uncomfortable and remember what all my other worlds have taught them, which is that death is part of rebirth, by removing that sperm head, it actually transports them to the amniotic fluid space.
Yes.
Where did you ball?
I'm stuck on the outside of this worm, so keep going.
Keep going, yeah. So it definitely was putting people or on the edge of anger in going through that space. Most of my worlds just do a lot of rewarding of people for actually wandering around and going to the spots that are off the beaten path. But in this case, it was a very linear path, and there was a punishment at the end. And yet, of all the spaces that I've built, it's probably the one that had the most kind of cult following of by people who have told me even years later that they take anybody new they find in Horizon to that world first until it unfortunately got unpublished. But, it was a world that definitely dashed people's expectations and then brought them into a much deeper place than they ever imagined was possible in virtual reality. And I believe it's
such
the combination.
Rudimentary, low poly
yes,
tools.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was a super big lesson for me.
Yeah. And I think it landing for you. And the other thing that you told me was that you could never pitch that world to any studio for any amount of money. And anybody would have ever signed off on building it or funding it.
Right.
And that was
40-foot
kind of
womb.
Yes. And we're going to be sperm that fail. You know, like that is the worst pitch in the world. Right. And yet what it did was it gave me permission to realize that we're just scratching at the very surface of what is possible to teach each other through these mediums.
Yeah.
And I could leave the expected winning journey and still have a big impact,
even if it was
a deep impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of your hundreds of worlds that you produced, all of them were based on that same philosophy of, you know, another sandbox for me to explore the potential of the human experience through this medium.
And they replaced my journaling. Yeah, exactly. They became the bookmarks for me where I can go back to those spaces that are fully metaphor, kind of like this one. There are no words. Mm-hmm. I took all my words out after I met you and less and less words as time went on. People have a whole pattern of emotional experiences that is very individual to them.
Mm-hmm.
They still visit my worlds, not because they can explain the world to anybody, but because it resets them into something that they'd prefer to be for a moment. It kind of imprints something that feel safe and predictable to them because they've lived through the chaos that I put them through, and they know how to dance through that. So I think that over time, hearing why people return to my spaces and when they do, and why I come to Walk About Mini Golf, by the way, because I have come to this app many times when I've been feeling lost. And I'm like, okay, maybe we haven't had gotten a chance to connect for a while, but I can feel your group through these worlds. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of resets me just really gently. And well, getting to meet your patrons too. So beautiful.
We'll go to go full circle on the conversation we've had over the years. Last time we met and Raptor Cliffs had just came out, I gave you homework when you finally went into to see Raptor Cliffs, which is sort of a coastal highway, family-owned mini golf park that has real live dinosaurs. And my homework for you was, tell me about the family that runs it, because they're not there. We don't represent them as avatars. The only things that we put in place are the arrangement of props to suggest the personalities of the people are there. I don't know what the family's made of. I don't know how many kids they have. I don't know how old they are. I don't know how they're running it, but there's a feeling that they are there. And that links directly to the conversations we had about the fact that one can imbue a space with a story, an emotion that is we don't have to cross all the T's and dot all the I's. We can allow our players to come to their own conclusion, and whatever that conclusion is the correct one, because it is theirs.
I love that. Yeah. It's funny, I forgot about that homework specifically. And in hindsight, what I remember about the space was I felt like the family who runs that dinosaur park is there, but it's kind of a Freaky Just Friday story. No, the dinosaurs are mirroring the family personalities.
That's cool. I buy that. That's a yes.
I had this, and the way I could bridge that story with yours is to say the dinosaurs came for the food at first. They came for the safety in the village. But when the people left, they realized that the food wasn't just nutrients, it was people. It was people who enjoyed the interaction with them, and they stuck around to try to play a little longer. And
I am here to say you're right.
Yay! Oh, that's so good. That's so great. It's a funny
we've hit hole nine. This is customarily kind of where we start to wrap up. Is there any sort of parting things we want to make sure that we hit upon before we go our separate ways?
It's a little, sappy maybe to some people that don't appreciate emotional flow, but I've been wanting to have a stage to celebrate you for a very long time, and just it's been and continues to be a almost, it feels like in some ways, a customized Disneyland adventure to be in your orbit and to speak on so many different levels about what it means to be human and what it means to be art being.
And I feel exactly the same way with our conversations. And we meet every week.
Every week.
Right now on Thursdays. You are in the VR world much deeper than I am, although I'm usually here. And so you've experienced tens of thousands of worlds in VR chat. And so usually come up with a sort of menu of places for me to visit, always surprising me about what's possible, especially in a place like VR chat where it's uncurated. There's a lot of strangeness out there, but there's also some amazing things that have been experimented, and you tend to find them. And so sometimes we get together and we just stand in one place next to a tree and talk for an hour, and sometimes we hop from world to world. But I really cherish the conversations we have, and I hope that you see that relationship is manifest in the environments that we
absolutely
produce.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Walkabout Mini Golf is like the easy island to get anybody who is stuck in a certain spot in VR or who is stuck in physical reality. Walkabout Mini Golf is the spot to arrive in first, because the fear in people who've been in VR for a long time is that low poly means cheap, and it means like not current is what it means. It doesn't mean right now. And what we found when talking to different creators in VR chat is that Walkabout Mini Golf is the exception for a lot of them. They're slightly annoyed with it at times because their friends will leave VR chat to come over here and play golf. And so it destroys that hierarchy in their mind. But for people in physical reality coming into this app, they start to realize that it isn't about the golfing game and it isn't about the environment. It's about the relationships they're building and getting to meet so many people who could describe how they've built a network of relationships all over the world from being in here, including with their own long lost family member.
Right.
Who they all have gotten headsets because this is where they come together to check in and play with each other. Yeah. And grandparents get to play with their grandchildren more than once a year, et cetera. That's so
and
I think that there is
have conversations that are harder for them to have on a phone.
Exactly.
With their kids.
And so this is a very lovely, gentle, I would say, multi-layered way for people to relearn how to be in relationship with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And feel loved and tended to from every direction in what seems to the brain like such a simple space. But because of its simplicity, the magic feels more alive in me and our connection. And it honors what we're making of the space instead of pulling us into the space and diluting our connection. And that is the point of a walkabout. The walkabout is about gathering one's identity to then be better in the village you return to eventually.
Yeah.
So
I'm so happy you see that, because we definitely consciously attempt to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So much could be learned from this app, and I wish you all every success for that human conditioning piece.
Thank you for your friendship, Dr. Diaz, and for this conversation. And my battery's about to go out, so I want to say hi. And
hello,
thank you
goodbye.
For everybody who listened and came along. And do you have any places that we can reach your work?
Oh,
How can people find you?
Thank you. My big initiative right now that I've been working on, we're hitting our one-year anniversary in about a week, is something called Bridgemakers. So you can learn more about that work, which is not just about communities in VR. It's about being intentional community builders wherever we are as human beings. And there's a website called bridgemakers.world. And that is where you can keep your eye on what we're doing. And we've got a YouTube channel where we do live streaming of all our events. And it's a kind of funny project because we're actually working to teach people how to have healthy conflict about complicated and hard things. Mm-hmm. And we're building all kinds of events and trainings around making that fun and delightful, but also teaching people how to get serious with each other and not run away.
That's great.
And so it's bridgemakers.world. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yay.
Well, thanks again, Dr. Diaz.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for following along this week. And we'll see you next time.
Yay. Bye-bye.
Bye.